This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
David's five-day preliminary hearing didn't just build the murder case. It exposed what Celeste Reeves' own parents allegedly knew and what they actually signed off on. A lot of it we've been speculating about for quite some time now. And turns out it looks like we were probably pretty right. A notarized London travel form, a Vegas trip with her sister along for the ride, David sitting in the family's church pew, all entered into evidence while her father's attorney maintained he'd never had contact with the singer. Defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis is with us today on whether the adults who were supposed to protect Celeste face legal exposure of their own. We're going to talk about that lane of things first, then we're going to talk about all of the other stuff that David is now facing that have come out in those preliminary hearings where the judge, spoiler alert, said, yes, you're going to trial. Robin is off today on a speaking engagement, so it's you and me, Eric. We're kicking it old school. Let's start by talking about the parents here a little bit. Detective Farrell testified that the family knew David attended their church, he says. The sister went to Vegas with them, and the parents signed a notarized form letting their 13-year-old fly to London with a grown man. These are all the allegations under California's child endangerment statute. Isn't that exactly what permitting a child to be placed in a dangerous situation looks like? You tell me.
You know, it's certainly a fair question. Most folks would not think to allow one of their minor children to go with a strange adult, you know, overseas and things like that, on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, you look at cases like Michael Jackson, and David is a far cry from Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Not equating the two. But, Michael Jackson, some people let their children hang out with Michael Jackson. He's a star. Oh, there must be security around, right? Oh, it must be safe, right? And those assumptions don't always hold.
That's a really interesting point. It's a lot of, there must be, it must be, dot, dot, dot. And you put that guard down, I guess. Well, some people do anyway. People who maybe are not super aware or, I don't know, experienced in the world. I don't know. There might be some barrier here. I know they are immigrants. Celeste, I believe, is the first generation in the country. If we're looking at it from that perspective, this is not something that's necessarily completely unheard of. People and celebrities, and when celebrities, some celebrities that seem to have a penchant for children have been known to do this. R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, the list goes on and on. Elvis Presley, the list goes on and on. What's going through their mind, do you think, at that moment in time when the adult in the room says, I'd like to take your 13-year-old on this trip? Is it, wow, what an opportunity. We can't afford her this. Let's let this grown-ass man take my 13-year-old across the world with him. Nothing could possibly be going on here. He just wants to give her a great experience. Are people that stupid?
I think it's easy for folks to be blinded by sort of the glamour of it all or something, and that can cause them to not accurately discern the risks that also might be attendant to an event like that. You know, like I said, this famous person, they're a celebrity. And I think there's kind of a notion that, oh, wouldn't it be great if my kid can experience this? Like you said, they might not be able to experience it otherwise. And then, oh, what about these risks? What about these concerns? What about these dangers? Well, let's sort of not give much attention to those things, because this is a really cool opportunity for our kiddo, isn't it? And I'm just wondering if that's part of the thought process.
It does make you wonder. I mean, at the moment in time, David did not have any charges against him. There was no criminal history. He had a lot of macabre music, and that was kind of about it. And there was a huge age difference. If we were to look at something like Michael Jackson and a case like that, in situations there, there was a track record. There was a history. There was allegations anyway. At least nothing that was solidified in court. But certainly there were hearings, there were trials, and people still, even said, "Well, you can go hang out with my kid," and they looked the other way. Back at that point in time, we just looked at Michael Jackson as the bad guy. We didn't necessarily look super closely at the parents at that point in time. Was that a mistake? Why do you think we look at this differently today? Why are we more quick to judge the parents than we were 20 years ago with Michael Jackson for putting children in harm's way?
Tony, I think there's been sort of a trend towards exploring parental responsibility for horrible things that happen, including crimes. You know, we look at school shootings, for example. Back in the day, there was no chance that the parents would be charged criminally or anything like that. And now, recently, parents have been charged and, in fact, convicted in part for their involvement in the acts of their own children. And so, I think we're sort of looking at that more critically and determining, hey, should these parents, do they have a legal duty to be the custodians of these children, to care for these children? And if they screw that up too badly and something horrible happens, should the parents be on the hook a little bit as well? I think we're moving in that direction.
Yeah, I think we are too. So there's the argument here that he's trying to make. I had no idea. Celeste's father told TMZ through his attorney in May that he'd never had any contact with this guy. Well, Detective Farrell said the opposite under oath. If the father told investigators the same story during the missing persons reports that he didn't know Burke, while his own signature sat on a notarized London travel form, if that's true, that's what they brought into court, that's not an embarrassment. Is that obstruction?
Generally speaking, you can't lie to police. Making a false statement to a police officer is usually a crime on the state level, at least. And so I think that can be problematic if a person knowingly was deceptive to a police officer in a way that impaired an investigation or threw the police in a different direction or something of that nature. That could rise to the level of obstruction, although I think they'd have to establish really like a culpable mind state for the person who gave the knowing false statement. Why did they do that? And so that's a bit of a question mark still, but we're at risk here of criminal liability.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to really feel like that. I've questioned this from the beginning, just on my gut. Obviously, we haven't had evidence to talk about yet, but now we do. When you have something like this, okay, so let's just rewind a bit. You have Celeste, she's missing. As far as we know publicly, the parents, and I don't know exactly what was said to investigators, so let's caveat it with that. But as far as what we've known publicly, what's been stated is that they didn't know much about David. They knew that their daughter, their 13-year-old, had a boyfriend named David. Okay. But that was it. That was pretty much, it. Your daughter's missing. Your daughter's been murdered. We know that now. Or is dead. We don't quite know if it was a murder officially. But you have all this going on, and you're pretending you don't know the guy that everybody's got a microscope on, whose trunks your daughter was found in. That feels more like you're protecting yourself than you're trying to lead investigators down a path of what actually happened to your daughter, because you feel a little guilty about being such a dumbass by letting her be with the guy in the first place. That's my conjecture on it. What's yours?
Yeah, that seems pretty darn reasonable in terms of an interpretation, because, when these things happen, I remember watching the Michael Jackson documentary, and they're talking to parents of children who really let their children hang out with Michael Jackson, and some bad stuff allegedly happened. And the parents are pretty, ashamed, and they feel guilty, and it's embarrassing for them. And they, explain their reasoning at the time. But I can understand how Celeste's parents may share some of those feelings under these circumstances that, gosh, could I have done more? Did I make a stupid call by letting my kid go with this adult? And especially when you have sort of the magnifying glass of the national media on you, I could see where a person might not want to admit that. But if that impulse to not admit that causes you to knowingly give a false statement to police who are investigating the death of your daughter, I think that's problematic. I don't think that that's something we can just write off as understandable. Oh, these parents were going through a lot. Sure they were, but you can't lie to police, especially if it's going to hurt the case that's trying to seek justice for your dead daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I want to have as much empathy as I can for someone who's lost a child. I cannot imagine going through it. I pray to God I never have to go through that, because I cannot imagine the feeling of what that is like. I've seen many people in my life who've had to go through that, and they're never whole ever again. So I try to have some empathy there, but at the same point, when you're actively seemingly, some may take it as impeding an investigation because you don't want the spotlight shown on your bad choices, you know, as being part of how the recipe made this. That's pretty sick. The parents reported Celeste missing multiple times in 2024. They took her phone. Burke allegedly paid a classmate $1,000 to deliver a replacement. So maybe they're sitting there going, what the hell did we get ourselves into? How did we, you know, maybe we shouldn't have been so generous with our daughter's time or our time or our allowing him to be with her. I don't know. Maybe they're sitting there going, this was a bad idea, but how do we back this down now? They knew that she kept going back to this man. Keep in mind, she's 13. My daughter is 13. It is not an impossibility to keep your child restrained at home if you need to. That is not an impossibility. I don't restrain my child at home. I don't have fears of these sort of things. But they're 13. They're not jumping in the car and running across town on a whim. And then they signed a travel form so she could go across the ocean with the same guy. At what point does reporting your daughter missing and then handing her over and her passport over to the guy cross from negligent into facilitating?
Sure. I mean, you know, you want to think about the knowledge that the parents may have had of the risks when they gave the authorizations that they allegedly did. You know, it's got to be a difficult position for those parents. And I think, you know, if you have, especially if you have a child who is perhaps acting out, I'm not saying Celeste was doing that, but generally speaking, if you did, it might be difficult to control that person. Not impossible. You like you mentioned, you certainly could. But on the flip side, you shouldn't be, like you said, facilitating, encouraging, helping, aiding in those sorts of activities for whatever reason. And if you do, you're sort of inserting yourself in terms of your involvement, what you've authorized, and what comes with the consequences of that may, you know, legally, ethically, or otherwise be on your shoulders, at least to a degree. And I'm not trying to blame the parents for the death of Celeste, but I'm just saying, when talking about why things happen and what we could do differently, these are important questions.
Very important questions. Do you think that there is a case here where there could be charges brought against the parents at some point, or is this one of those chapters in this story that kind of lives in a gray area at the end of the day, where yeah, they were not good choices, they were irresponsible, they were ignorant. I mean, lying, if it turns out that they did know a lot about this relationship and then lied to investigators, that's something. But we don't know if that's what occurred. That has to be, you know, parsed out here in court. But other than that, being an idiot parent isn't necessary, unless you are the one that's causing the harm directly to your child, isn't necessarily a crime. There's horrific parents everywhere that keep their children. Where do you think this goes, if anywhere, with any sort of, you know, criminal culpability for the parents in this case?
Sure. So knowingly making a false statement to police is a crime. And saying, oh, I was distraught, or oh, I was trying to protect my family, or any of those reasons are not defenses. And so by the letter of the law, that may be a crime. When it comes to child endangerment, permitting your child to be in a dangerous situation, usually there has to be a temporal connection to that permission and the and some injury to your child. And I'm wondering if they would be able to argue, hey, regardless of the permission, it's not as if this thing happened, you know, during the London trip or during some trip that I authorized. So, and then lastly, I think that even if by the letter of the law, there was something criminal that happened, I imagine authorities would say, hey, these are grieving parents who have lost their child in a horrific fashion. They may have made a misstep, but we're not going to go after them for it. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, I mean, what a misstep. I mean, it is something they will live with for the rest of their lives. And ignorance has consequences. And they are facing them now, without a doubt, whether it goes beyond that. I don't know. I guess my concern is that there's other children in the house. But maybe this was it's beyond close call. I mean, it's a collision with the worst that maybe this will be one hell of a cautionary tale to live by, if nothing else. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work through our conversation about the case of David and Celeste Rivas Hernandez.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.